Hi, this is Sonia Walger and welcome to Bookish, my podcast where I talk to interesting people about the five books that have shaped them most. This episode, my guest is director, writer and producer Jenny Kohner, best known as the showrunner and writer of the HBO series Girls. She runs a production company with Lena Dunham and is co-founder of the feminist newsletter Lenny Letter and its Random House imprint Lenny Books. John Hamm is a mutual friend, and knowing what a prolific reader she is, he suggested her for the podcast, and she was kind enough to let me interview her in her LA office.
I feel like I wrote you a list in a blackout. Like, I can barely remember anything. Ever since I wrote it, I've thought of 14,000 more, and I was like, I'll just sneak those in.
You can sneak them in. That's the whole point. I mean, I think that's what's really fun about it. That's why I try and give people as much of a head start as possible, and not, you know, ambush them with this. Because to think about the books that have shaped rather than your favorite ones, I think is such an interesting question. Because they're not the same necessarily.
No, at all. That's what, like, one I didn't put on, and it's so embarrassing and great, is The Prophet by Khalil Gibran.
Oh, yes.
Like,
of course.
That, I mean, in high school, I mean, huge to me. Like,
totally. But I think if most women of our age were honest, it would be on all of our lists.
Yeah, right? Totally. I mean, also, like, did I put on The Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing?
Nope.
See, let's do my list.
We'll see what you sneak in.
That was the thing that started Chick Lit, and then Chick Lit got this very bad reputation because they made so many bad ones. Mm. But Melissa Banks was a really, really good writer, and that was such a great book. Mm. And I read it, you know, my early 20s or something like that, and I remember thinking, like, oh, right, like, you can write about your experience as a woman in the world, like, and feel slightly literary while still writing about, like, modern problems.
Right. I don't know that one. I haven't read it.
It was like the first, it was called Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing. It was literally the first chick lit book ever. It came out, I want to say, like, 94, but I seriously, 94 is, like, for some reason the only date I ever remember anything.
Right.
So everything I say today happened in 94,
happened in
94. I promise.
I looked up the dates of what you did. You tell me which book, do you want me to remind you of them?
Yes, remind me.
So you have American Pastoral.
Right.
Bad Behavior. The Silver Palette Cookbook, Americana, and Postcards from the Edge.
Okay, great.
So you go in whatever chronology or importance that matters to you. I can give you the chronology of when they were published, but you tell me when they mattered in your lives.
Okay. I'm going to do Postcards.
Yeah, which is, for the listeners, was published in 1987 and is the semi-autobiographical novel written by Carrie Fisher, the glorious late Carrie Fisher.
And it is, like, it was the funniest book I'd ever read. When I was always into comedy, but all the, like, you know, like, boy comedy books weren't doing it for me, really. And I remember I read that, and I think I might have met her by that time. I was friends with her stepson. I'm very close still with her stepson, Harper, so I've been near her over the years. It was right around then, but I just remember reading it and thinking, like, oh my God, this is the funniest thing, and this is the truest feeling book about mothers and daughters. And even though it's the most extreme version, your mother is Debbie Reynolds and you're Carrie Fisher, it's still the thing of, like, I need you, I don't need you. Be my mommy, stay the hell away from me.
How old were you when you read it, do you know?
I can't do math, but I was born in 1971, okay. So I don't know. Whatever that was, how old does that make me?
71, 87, so, you know, older.
And I just thought it was so funny.
16 is when it came out.
Okay.
16, but
that's when I met Harper, so I don't know which came first. But I mean, I even, like, remember, like, there was a Steve Martin quote on the back about, like, you know, something about Moby Dick. Like, I just remember every detail of it, the cover of it, the feel of it. I've probably read it like 15 times. It's probably, I'm about due to reread it again. Like, I just always, it makes me feel really safe and comfortable. Mm. And it was like very insightful about relationships. Like, just, it had little moments where it was like, and I will misquote this obviously, but like, sure. I remember there's this thing that happens, and I remember it actually now more from the movie, so, but it is in the book, but like, it's Dennis Quaid, she gets mad at him for, you know, sleeping with someone else, and she's like, it's not the way, it's not that sleeping with someone else, it's that you didn't tell me, and she's like, and he's like, no, it is the sleeping with someone else. He's like, women always say that, like, that's the way it happened, and I just, you told me wrong, and he's like, it's absolutely the sleeping with someone else, and I, you know, so there's like a lot of like, I guess I was in my 20s, and so there's a lot of relationship-y. Mm.
Did it feel transgressive? Did it feel, or just, it did it just feel affirmative?
It just felt like there weren't funny books by women.
Right.
Like, that was the thing. Like, right. I was like, oh, women can write and be funny. I mean, Carrie really opened my eyes to that in, not on a personal level, even though I what did have the great honor of, like, sitting at her feet sometimes and hearing her talk and hearing her talk about her life, but I did not have the good fortune of her like being a mentor or anything, but it was just like a woman where I could look at her and say, oh, you can do this, you can be a comedy writer, you can be funny and still tell really, really human stories. It's sort of the way I felt when I discovered Judd too, though he's not a woman. But he, you know, he pushes for the truth all the time, and someone's truth, and that's how you get authenticity and the best stuff, especially in comedy.
Right.
And the more you push the truth and the romance and the love, the more fun you can have with the other stuff.
Right.
You know, like Bridesmaids was a movie that, you know, could have Maya shitting on the street, but also had this like deep, you know, feelings about friendship.
Right, right. Was comedy something revered in your house as a kid? Were you like brought up with that? Were your parents funny?
My parents are very funny, and they are writers, but they wrote dramas. But they're really funny people, both of them. So I, and all of their friends were funny. All of their friends were writers, and I grew up in a really, like, I think, charming world. And my mom had a lot of dinner parties, and, you know, I got to sit at the table with a lot of really just kind of brilliant, interesting people. I remember, like, this is like when I was 4 years old or something. I remember being at a dinner party at my parents' house, and this is when we lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I think my mom was going to grad school at Harvard, and they were having, there was some conversation happening at the table about the New Testament and the Old Testament, and I said, "What's the difference?" And I think it was my mom who said, "Dolly Parton's not in the Old Testament." Like, everyone started laughing so hard, and I was like, didn't quite get it, but like, I got the vibe of it.
Right.
And it was just one of those things where I just have this memory, like, that was the kind of, like, you know, it wasn't like the Algonquin Round Table, but it was like, it was fun and pleasurable and
irreverent.
Filled and irreverent.
Yeah. Were they readers?
Yes, big readers. My dad especially.
Really?
Yes.
Did you inherit taste for book literature?
Yeah, that's what the Philip Roth, which is another one on my list, fully is all Larry Connor.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did he, do you think you read it for him, with him, with him in mind? Was it part of like a bonding thing?
I mean, I think
the
he told
you
me
was past
American
Pastoral.
Right. I think he just told me it was great. It's a father-daughter story, but weirdly, and maybe this is like insane, but I feel like he wasn't even conscious of that. Like, right. that wasn't part of the thing. Like, I think he told me about this book and the Richard Ford book, Independence Day, at the mm-hmm. same time. And right. I probably read them at the same time. And so, but that was a book, like, you know, my dad gave me Catcher in the Rye when I was 10 or something, and it blew my mind. And so I really, really valued his book recommendations.
Sure.
And, you know, it's funny because now I probably read more than he does, or maybe not actually, but we don't talk about books in the same way we used to. But when I was in high school and college, we talked a lot, and even right after college, we talked a lot about books. And so that was a book that he said, I think you're going to love this book. And I loved every second of it. And it also was before I was like, sort of knew the complicated nature of Philip Roth.
Right, sure.
I mean, and I still read Philip Roth because I really do love a lot of his writing. But I didn't have any of that association, yeah. so yeah. I read it really, really purely.
Yeah.
And I also weirdly like fiction about sports. Mm. So I like the baseball hero aspect, uh-huh. and I don't care for sports really, but I like fiction about sports.
That's interesting. That's
yeah, I just like the metaphor of yeah. it, and I like, you know, I love a baseball movie, and I love a...
It's funny, that's one of those areas where the cultural thing, despite having been here for 17 years, really still flares up for me. I mean, I'm married to a man who does not, thankfully, take any interest in sports,
right,
so
right.
We're free of that.
Yeah.
But as a result, I watch baseball, and I may as well be watching a Zulu national
yeah.
dance.
Yeah.
I mean, I have absolutely no idea
yes.
what is happening.
Yes.
I can't believe that all this time has passed and seemingly no points have been won.
Well, I also feel like I can't believe I don't understand it. I understand baseball, but sort of. Not the scoring.
Right.
But I can't believe that I don't understand it also because, like, the very most generic, most generalized version of, like, the guys who sit on the couch and watch football are not our nation's top intellectuals.
Right.
So I'm like, well, if I put my mind to it, could I learn it? Or could I just really not learn it? Like, is it just like I had blocked?
Is it just something I'm never going to... No, that was how I felt about driving. I remember being failing my driving test the first time in England, which is a little more stringent than it is here in my
I'm
defense.
Sure.
But still, I remember being like
everything.
Really? All these fucking imbeciles can
yes,
drive
right,
and I
right,
can't?
Right.
What is happening? So, yes.
Nina's failed her driver's test three times, I think.
Oh, okay. I love her even more.
Yeah.
That's great.
And more. Then we were just like, let's just not.
Let's just not. Let's just take
like,
it.
There's probably a reason for this test. And she doesn't. She just takes
these
cabs everywhere.
Uber's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, let them drive. Yeah, I feel like the baseball... It's interesting that you say that about sports because Richard Ford is one of my beloved writers.
Yes.
Don DeLillo is another who I
yeah.
love. But I couldn't get inside White Noise because it's... No, not White Noise. The
one with the 100...
The one with the baseball.
Yeah,
the
100 pages of
yeah,
baseball.
I'm blanking on what it is. It starts with the ball. He goes home with the ball.
Anyway, yeah.
The most famous Don DeLillo.
No, I know. I know. We'll get it.
We'll get it. And I was like...
Underworld. Under... Isn't it?
Is it under... No.
It's... Some, I feel like it's
maybe
under
it's,
something.
Yes, maybe
Underworld
it is.
Underworld or something.
I'll look it up in a minute and we'll put it back in.
Okay.
But yeah, and I remember thinking, like, I know I'm missing out, but I can't get inside this.
Yeah.
I'm not even feeling the metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm just out. It's just a world that's utterly...
Right. It's too...
Closed to me.
Right.
Yeah. But it's lovely that you and your dad had that sharing back and forth of books through college. Sometimes
yeah.
I think that as a parent, I'm finding with the podcast that where people had these points of connection with their parents, they became... for many of them, such a lifeline. Like, that became
yeah.
the currency that you exchange with your parent in
yeah.
the absence, particularly through adolescence, where it becomes harder and harder to fucking communicate anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
at least a book recommendation or being able to share that
in
the way that guys
way.
Have it with sport, I
yes.
guess, maybe with their dads.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That for a lot of, particularly the girls or women that I've been interviewing, it's been interesting
That's
how
interesting.
The books have been... There's always been... at least one book that made this connective
that's so funny
thread
yeah it. I think our first one was Catcher in the Rye
yeah
but
that's come up on this on
but
this
I'm sure
yeah
and then that yeah and Richard Ford
yeah.
I mean you know all those guys
yeah Richard Ford's a hero.
He's incredible, right?
He just got a new one out about his parents, which I'm dying to read.
But I couldn't read a
you
new couldn't. One.
No, you can say that.
I can.
He's probably not going to listen to okay. this. It's okay.
It's so bad. I couldn't.
You couldn't get through it. No. Tell me why.
I don't even remember. And I, when I tell you, I can get through anything.
Really?
I just it, the book I'm talking about is the one that was like still the guy. Still the Independence Day.
Still, so that's Canada, right? No?
It's, I don't even remember, but it's, you know, the...
Oh, his latest one is Autobiography, and it's about his parents.
Oh, no. This was, so this I guess, the one right before that. Okay. That I couldn't...
Yeah.
It was like...
Too much.
It was the same character. It was mm-hmm. late in life mm-hmm. of that guy whose name escapes me.
Yeah.
But who I loved through all of the other the
sports
books.
Writer. Yeah.
And it's the sports writer, and it's him, and I don't know if I was like sick of like old white men and their
quite
journeys.
Quite
like
possibly.
It may have just been that. This was more interesting to me before, you know, I thought about white male privilege 25
right.
times a day.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. I didn't like read reviews or anything, so I don't know if like people loved it or
I don't know either.
But I rarely put a book down. Too.
Really?
Yeah, like I will finish everything, even terrible things.
Oh, that's interesting. It's one of my... I have some follow-up questions that I ask at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of them is do you... What was the last book you threw across the room? But it may have been that
it
one.
It was that one.
It was.
And that was probably the first in 10 years.
Really?
I mean, I didn't throw it across the room.
But
I just...
Metaphorically.
Ordered something else on my kitchen.
Cued the next one up. So American Pastoral, why do you think it was a book that shaped you? What do you think shaped you about it?
I'm not sure. I think what it did is it just like it captured my imagination,
mm-hmm.
and so it was like an early book that made me think, oh, you can live in a world of a book even months after and years after you've read that book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the shaping was more like learning to, learning how powerful good literature can be.
Right.
And just then always constantly being on the hunt for something that moves you that much.
Yeah.
Which is like really hard, especially after you finish that book that moves you so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to figure out the next one.
Isn't it true? There's such a literary hangover that
yes.
And then like loss.
And then
real
everything,
loss
real loss.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm still mourning the characters of Americana. Like,
oh, tell me about it. Well, Americana, which is Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Yeah.
And it was published in 2013.
I read it the year it came out or mm-hmm. the year after or something. And everyone was raving about it. And I was like, I gotta get to it. And I read it, and it was the most romantic book I'd ever read in my life.
Mm.
Like, it was the greatest love story of all time.
Really?
Yeah, and it made me feel so soft and uncynical.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, I don't know, it just made me feel that there was, like, hope in the world mm-hmm. and that love is real, and that you mm-hmm. can, you know, really find yourself, but also find someone who is like, you know, the right match and the perfect thing. And then it also tells like incredible stories about just like tales of race in Africa and America. And
it's a story of a Nigerian girl who comes to study in America,
in
right?
the U.S.
Right,
yes.
And her
boyfriend can't come, and they're madly in love as teenagers, and then she sees other people in America and what those relationships are like, and then, you know, it's just always in each other's, they're always in each other's minds all mm-hmm. of this time, and it's written very unsentimentally,
mm-hmm.
which I love,
mm-hmm.
but it is truly the most romantic book I've ever read.
Oh, interesting. It's I was fascinated. It's been on my bedside table. It's on my
oh my god, read it tonight.
Tower of books. I will. I really, really will. I was so glad to see it on your list because it just reinforced what you know, I've heard.
Sometimes when like a great book comes out and all the reviews are so great, I get really like, all right.
I do too.
And sometimes I'll read it eventually.
Yeah, that's what I get. I let's wait for everyone to calm down.
Yes, and then exactly. Let's see if it's really that good. And this book was just more than everyone said.
Oh, lovely. When I saw it on your list, I was reading about it and reminding myself of what it was about. And I was struck. I was reading some of the interviews with the author, who is Nigerian herself.
Yeah.
And she was talking in this way. I found this really fun interview she'd done with, I think it was Terry Gross. And she was talking about her experience of race because she'd gone to Harvard. I think it was Harvard. And she said this. I wrote it down. She said, race is such a strange construct because you have to learn what it means to be black in America. So you have to learn that watermelon is supposed to be offensive. And I was so struck by this because in a completely white girl way, I relate in that we don't experience racism in England in the same way that Americans do. Meaning collectively as a society, it is a different experience because of a different history. And I, having grown up in the melting pot that is London, probably more akin to New York than LA, really was astonished when I got here at the way race was viewed. I just didn't know that conversation because it's not the conversation we have at home. Because England is this tiny country that fucking colonized the world, so everyone came to live with us, so we all rub up and down against each other, and it's just different. And I read that and I was really struck by it. I was really struck by what that must be to come in black skin to this country and find that you're being treated completely unlike any way you've ever experienced.
There's no racism in Africa.
Right.
There's no... They're all Africans.
Right.
And so that's her journey in America, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. I loved her saying that the Americana, the title, comes from what they friendlily, jokingly call Africans who've been to America and come back with some airs and graces. There's like, it's a subtle, joshing, gentle mockery. It's like Americana. Because I was curious where the title
came
from. Yeah. But I like that. Anyway, I thank you for the recommendation because I'm going to read it. One of your other books, well, you have two. You have the Silver Palette Cookbook, which I was so thrilled to see somebody at last put a cookbook on.
Yes, and actually,
and Bad Behavior.
It's that one, Silver Palette Cookbook, and The Big Basics, and by the same women, the Silver Palette women,
but Sheila Luckins, and Julie Russo,
And they wrote together, I guess, in the 70s and 80s, and they did this book called The Big Basics, which was like supposed to be the next generation's, my mom's generation's joy of cooking. So it's very 80s. It's like very, like a lot of like pesto
and arugula.
I don't even think they'd gotten to arugula yet. Like it's really like, you know, but my mother cooked all the time and I learned to cook from her, but I also really, really learned to cook from reading cookbooks. So, and it really relaxes me. So
I do too.
I have a big cookbook collection and I just keep them on the side of my bed and I read them. And, you know, that's the great way to learn how to cook is to, you read enough cookbooks, then you realize, oh, well, beef stew is always going to start with a little flour and browning the beef and whatever, and that's how you learn to cook without cookbooks.
Right.
Which is the real, true joy.
Right.
I mean, I love recipes and, being inspired by them, and I still use them all the time. I'm not, like, going off book of the Jerusalem cookbook, but it is, you know, they give you, that's how you learn to just cook freely, which is so fun. And that book I brought to college and actually cooked at college.
Did you?
Yeah. And we lived in like a little...
You were the most popular girl in college.
And so we lived in a little, like, it was weird. They built, at Sarah Lawrence, they built like almost this little section of ski lodges or something. Mm-hmm. And we were in one of them, and I can't remember how many people we had in the house, 7 or 8 or something. And I would make dinner, because I always loved to cook, and that was what I cooked from all the time.
Wow.
And, you know, there was the chicken marbella, which is like, I still have friends who make that, which is this,
it's
like...
It's so 80s, it's so great, with the prunes and the garlic, it's so delicious.
Exactly,
yeah.
And there's a great bolognese recipe I sometimes go back to. I haven't opened that book for a really long time, but like, I will never...
Do you still have it?
...part with it. I do.
That's
I have
great.
Both of those cookbooks.
That's so lovely.
So...
Does your daughter cook? Is it something you've passed on?
She's just started to. She's really into baking.
Uh-huh.
She's just, but mainly because she just wants to then eat the baked things.
Sure, who can blame
her? So she's mostly into baking at 8 p.m. at night. but
just when you want your kitchen turned
upside down. I've been making some penne alla vodka lately.
Oh, nice.
That's from the new Jess Seinfeld book, which I love.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
It's great. It's called Food Swings, and it's like all about vice and virtue.
I see. I follow her on Instagram.
It's very smart. And realistic. And anyway, she has a really easy recipe, and I made that, and that's become the kids' favorite. So, you know, I've been making it a lot lately. And then she was home, and I wasn't home, and she made it herself. And
how'd
she said, I was like, "You don't know how to open a can?" Because she really didn't. She got it like halfway open, the can of tomatoes. And I think she never found the vodka because we keep
it
in the freezer.
A good thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I didn't taste it, but she didn't like come down and make me make eggs or something for her later.
Okay.
But so she's not into cooking like I was at that age.
Right.
Like following my mom around the kitchen.
Yeah. It was fun seeing that on your list because it reminded me of this tiny little cookbook that I had that I really, if I were rigorously to do this list, probably be one of my five.
Yeah.
And it was a teeny little hardback, and it was a list of, you know, kiddie friendly recipes.
Yeah.
But they were delightful. They were really charming. They were like strawberries dipped in chocolate,
right.
And then a cake made of sponge fingers and
right.
things. And it completely obsessed me. This
yes.
Book. And then I was... And so then I decided I wanted to do a dinner party for this because my mom was also, similarly to you, was a big host, and there was, our house always had people in it. And so mum put together a dinner party, and I...
How old were you at the time?
I was probably 7 or 8 when I gave my first dinner party. And she invited all the grown-ups. So
yeah.
It was my godparents
right.
and her and my stepfather, or probably her boyfriend at the time. And I themed it. So, of course, because I was 7, so everything had a fucking theme. And so everything had to be coloured. So... My poor, long-suffering parents and godparents sat through, like, blue-stained
right.
soup
right.
and purple cake.
That's delicious.
It was better. I did one every year. It became a thing.
So sweet.
And it became a thing. And then my very last dinner party, which I think was the one that they all, like, put their foot down afterwards, was I did a back-to-front dinner party. So you had to wear your clothes back-to-front. And you started with coffee
dessert.
And dessert. And then we ended up
I think
with
that's so clever. I think that's a great... I kind of want to do that now.
Go for it. Knock yourself out. It's all yours. Start with coffee
I
and cigarettes.
I think it's funny. I've never... Yes, really. Let's start right now with cigarettes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah, it was fun. So so anyway, I was so pleased to see someone else who had a cookbook on their list.
I mean, I'll show you a picture of my cookbook collection, but it's... I'm like... Whatever the opposite of a collector is, like I throw away everything, I get rid of everything. I don't care about an object at all. Like I would leave my house with my kids and my boyfriend probably.
Yeah.
And, you know.
On a good day.
And get the hell out and not pick a thing up.
Yep.
So it's the only thing I collect. And... It accidentally became a collection.
It's funny, isn't
you
it?
Know?
Yeah, I'm very similar in that way. I don't care about things, but my books, I can't throw a book out.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Well, it's interesting. That's why, you know, so changing over to Kindle was like a very weird thing for me because I thought I was going to be one of those people who's like, I need books tactile, mm-hmm. you know, and our entire living room is bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, and I thought, oh, I won't be able to handle this. And mm-hmm. I loved it. The convenience of it. I loved finishing a book, ordering the next one. Mm-hmm. I love making a queue of mm-hmm. six books. I love not having the hugest pile on my bedside mm-hmm. table that looks like it will topple and kill mm-hmm. me at any moment. And what I try to do is buy the hardcovers of the books I really love. Hmm. But in summer, I read 4,000 thrillers. Like, right. I love a summer thriller.
Right.
And it's really fun for me. And some of them are great and some of them are terrible. Yeah. But I'm a completist, so yeah. I finish them all.
Yeah.
And so those I don't care to right. have. And I'm like, I don't need more stuff.
Right. It's funny, isn't it? Do you find with a Kindle that you retain it as well? Because that's what I've lost.
Really?
Yeah. I've a very bad memory for everything.
Me too.
Absolutely everything.
But you should... I literally have an office full of women, and a lot of their job is to remember things for
me. Yes, yes.
I'm not kidding.
I would like to borrow your office full of women.
Yes, no, really, really, really.
Because I'm famous for it. I also can't win an argument with my husband, because he'll just look at me and be like, you don't fucking remember.
Right,
like, right. Shit, you're probably right. But one thing I have always had is the ability to remember titles and authors of novels, uh-huh. authors of books. That's just been a given. And I realized that when I got the Kindle, that
makes sense. I have the exact same thing. Because you're not seeing the cover every day.
All the time, yeah.
I have that exact same thing.
Yeah.
100%. And you don't have a connection to the way the book looks.
Right.
So...
Or a sense of when it's about to end. That's what I hate.
I know. I actually kind of love that.
Oh, do you?
Yes, because I'm like... Sometimes I'm like, yes, there's, you know, 62% of this book or whatever. And then sometimes I'm like heartbroken because it's... So I don't mind that.
Right.
I think that surprise element is fun. But I do completely like... I don't know... I'm really visual too, so like I know exactly where all my books are on my bookshelf just because I've seen them 100 million mm-hmm. times, and I go, oh, there's Bad Behavior and there's that, and so that's a weird feeling mm-hmm. of not like I don't know what the cover of Americana looks like.
Right.
I better buy that.
I
really
can
soon.
I'll send you a photo. I just buy my
No, that's what I meant to do though. I meant to buy the ones that I really
that you love.
Love. And then I get a lot of books for gifts, so those are the hardcovers I read. But the truth is, it's like the Kindle, the convenience of the Kindle also at night when you have a partner.
Yes. Huge.
Without that, you don't have to turn a light on.
Yeah.
And because I read myself to sleep like a baby every single night.
Yeah,
like I cannot fall asleep without reading.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and he falls asleep. Whatever, but it's like when it used to be that you had to mm-hmm. keep the light on, that mm-hmm. was like, it's really, I think, saving relationships.
I agree. It saved relationships. It saved us fighting over holidays because I would just pack and half my suit.
Right. Oh my God. Exactly. Yes. Lena still, I cannot convert her to the Kindle, and she literally is like going to break her back because she travels with 14 books at a time.
Hardbacks. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, there's nothing about, like, I mean, I've resigned myself to the fact now. For convenience, it's always in my bag.
Yeah.
But by preference, I'll read a book now.
I mourn
not knowing the width of what I have left. And the guys.
I really do get that.
All of
but
that.
But in the sun, when you're on vacation.
On the beach.
On a beach. When you can
already.
Read on a beach.
I know. It's pretty great.
It's pretty great.
Tell me about Bad Behavior, which is Mary Gateskill, and it came out in 1988. And I realized I know her name, I know the title, and I've never read anything she's written.
You must read it.
I will. I can't wait. I'm so excited to find someone I really don't know.
It's so much. When I read it, it was. I think I read it in the 90s. I don't think I read it right when it came out. I think I read it a few years later, but it. Spoke to me so much. It's short stories about young women
mm-hmm.
living in New York.
Were you in New York when you read it?
I was in New York when mm-hmm. I read it. I was a young woman living in New York, mm-hmm. roommates, dating, jobs at bookstores, just things that...
Did you work in a bookstore?
I didn't, but everyone I knew worked at the Strand at some point.
Oh, really?
They're always hiring. So, but it was the... closest book I ever read to something that seemed like my life.
Mm.
Like I was like, where's the cameras? Like where's the recorder? And
right.
and there's a lot different too. I wasn't a sex worker, for mm-hmm. example,
sure.
but it captures a moment of your 20s that I think even today is incredibly relevant. And I think, you know, there's similarities, real similarities to girls in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I don't know when I made that connection.
Right.
I feel like I made it after.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, Lena had said something about bad behavior in an interview, and I was mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, bad behavior. Yeah, but yeah, I do, yeah. I just remember thinking, like, you know, oh, this is me. I relate. She wrote right. the story that this was not me, but she wrote the story that Secretary is
yes,
based on.
Yes, I read that, yeah.
And which is a very different story, really, than the movie, or just a very different tone than the movie. But
sure,
I love.
She said that in an
interview. I love the tone of her stories. I just thought they felt so real, and I thought she was so honest about the human experience being a young woman
mm-hmm.
and relationships with men and, you know, struggling for confidence
mm-hmm.
and struggling to find your footing and thinking you know who you are and realizing you don't, and female friendships. It just, not that many female friendships, but I just remember reading it and thinking, oh, this is me. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a lot of friends during that time who would read Sex and the City, the column, and think, mm-hmm. oh, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
not feeling that.
I was not feeling that. I loved reading the column,
sure.
but I didn't relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are older women with fully formed personalities and lives,
right.
mostly, you know. But I thought, oh my God, there's this book about unformed women
right.
doing their thing. Like, maybe it's okay to be unformed.
Yeah. So interesting. I was really struck. I was reading, you know, I didn't get to read any of her stories, but I was reading about her and I was reading her interviews. And it seemed to me that she ruffled a lot of feathers with the way she wrote.
She absolutely
and
did.
And there was someone wrote this, which I loved. She wrote, Mary Gateskill is the consummate chronicler of the cock block, and to enact this dynamic, she enlists no overbearing chaperone, no pepper spray, no kicks to the groin. Her characters block cocks with their minds, which I just love.
That's funny. It's perfect. It's perfect, and it's true. It's like, you know, she just, these characters, a lot of them knew what they didn't know,
mm-hmm.
and they were okay with it, or not okay with it. They were
right.
pretty devastated by it,
right.
but they, you know, there aren't that many books about women, or maybe there are now, but at the time it felt like there weren't that many stories about women who were okay with being such a mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember at that same time, around that same time, reading The Liars Club by Mary Carr,
mm-hmm.
which I loved so
Me
much.
Me too. I love all her books.
I love all her books, but I really love that one.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the first book that got me seriously into memoir,
mm-hmm.
like the idea of loving a memoir. But I felt they remind me of each other texturally.
Well, that's interesting. I was, when I was reading about bad behavior, I... on Amazon, it's always fun to look when it's, particularly when it's a book or an author I don't know, I always try and look and see what other people have bought.
Yes.
Bought this, and James Salter came up
uh-huh.
with A Sport and a Pastime. Who is James Salter? Is one of my absolute, I mean, complete American heroes.
Right.
I love everything the man has ever written, and A Sport and a Pastime is one of the sexiest, most sort of dark, transgressive books.
Right.
It's basically a book about anal sex,
right.
I think, if in its essence.
Yeah.
But I was really struck that these two were considered.
When you read it, you'll be like, oh, I can see
how the female version
would
right.
do that.
Right, right,
you
right.
know, it's not quite like, I don't know that a human would put it together, but I totally get why a computer would.
Why a computer would
yeah.
link them. Yeah, that's
yeah.
funny. Yeah.
And her books are really graphically sexual.
Mm-hmm. I was interested, glad you drew the parallel to Girls, because when reading it, like I say, I didn't want to stab in the dark without having read it. But
yeah.
it felt like, from what I was reading, that there was an overlap there, that there was like a
definitely
willingness to bear all and share the messiness
yes.
of being young and experimental and sexual. And with an appetite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hers was, her stories are much more solitary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about the friendships, right. But it is about that time in right. life, which is, you know.
A rough one. God, I'm glad I'm not there anymore.
I know.
I really am.
So I felt every day on Girls.
Did you?
Yeah, kind of.
Really?
When we were pitching stories and stuff. Just always thinking, thank God that's over.
Glad that's done. I have some questions that are just easy.
Okay.
Whatever occurs to you ones, they're just follow-ups. What was the last book that made you cry? Do you cry in books?
I do cry in books. It was probably Americana.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, like, nothing I've read since then has moved me mm-hmm. in that way. Like, I still am searching for my next Americana.
Mm.
It's killing me.
Oh, lovely. I'm going to go home and start it.
Yeah.
What's the book you're most ashamed of loving?
Probably The Prophet.
Oh, okay.
You know, like... Because I have no shame about, like, self-helpy books or anything that. Like, I love those. But The Prophet is so... I mean, I haven't read it for 20 years, but it's...
It's still beautiful.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's beautiful. I mean, I haven't read it for a long, long time either, right. But I think I leafed through it. As everybody must do when they're getting married at one point. Right. I think I leafed through it for 10 years, 8 years ago. And I remember looking at it and thinking like, oh yeah, that was really mattered. I'm not over my dead body as this happening at my wedding.
Right, but. Right. That's so funny. Well, so I don't know. Yes, maybe it's The Prophet.
Maybe The Prophet. Last book you threw across the room. I think we covered that one. The book or author you feel most guilty about not having read?
I mean... go back and forth about Proust because I'm kind of like, should I just fucking do it? Like, should I just commit to it? And I feel that way too about what's that? I have no memory.
It's fine. We can ask one of the girls.
I should. You know, it's this British series that's like, it's almost like an upstairs downstairs.
Dance to the Music of Time.
Yes.
Anthony Powell, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Dance to the Music of Time. It's all those big ones.
Yeah.
Proust, I think I probably will die without reading. But mm-hmm. I do kind of, like, wish I had read it mm-hmm. or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I don't. I don't know. I'm pretty conflicted about that.
Okay.
Dance to the Music of Time, I think I really might pick up. Sometime and do because everyone just says it's the most.
Well, there's also the most enjoyable. Beautiful BBC series of it, so you can always watch it.
Well, I watch every show on television, so
you might enjoy that.
Maybe I'll just do that.
Where do you read?
In bed
only, or largely, mostly?
Largely in bed. Mm-hmm. There's nothing other more than reading in bed.
Do your kids read?
My daughter reads. My son, who is 10, reads, but not for pleasure yet. He right. listens to a lot of audiobooks for pleasure, but he doesn't read for pleasure yet. My daughter reads, mm-hmm. but not... I think I read a lot more at that age than she did,
mm-hmm.
but she also has 400 more options than I did.
Right, that's for sure.
You know?
Do you do audiobooks?
I have. Like, I've done, for sure, self-help audiobooks.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I think that's the best way to go. And I used to do them a lot more, but now that there's like podcasts everywhere, I just listen to podcasts all the time.
Yeah.
But I do think like, yeah, self-help books are the one. Those are the great ones.
It's so great. And also somehow it just, I don't know, it stings less.
Yeah.
The like cringe factor is minimized.
Yeah. And I like hearing Esther Perel read her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Her stuff and talk about sex. Well,
she has a new one coming out, I think.
She does. I'm on a panel with her.
Are you?
Tomorrow.
Oh, fun.
At the Goop Summit.
Oh,
I'm really excited to meet her.
Yes. Oh, that'll be exciting.
I like her book very much.
Who encouraged you to read?
Was your dad? Parents.
Your parents.
And not even, I mean, maybe they were aggressive about it, but it was just a reading house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who do you take your book recommendations from?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I'm going to ask you when we're done with this.
I should keep a list going. I really should.
My last three book recommendations that I read right in a row, and I loved two of three of them, were from Marshall Heyman, mm-hmm. who is a comedy writer, and he also writes for the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. and a sweet, sweet, lovely guy, and he reads every book mm-hmm. ever, all the new books.
Fun.
So he's the one who says, oh, have you read the new Elizabeth Strout? Have you read this? Mm-hmm. Read this.
Did you read the new Elizabeth Strout?
I'm about 72% into it.
72%.
And I'm actually really liking it, but I wish it had a chart like the way Crazy Rich Asians had a chart. To explain, because
the relationships of who's sister-in-law.
Yeah, because there's a lot of names and a lot.
There is, but I devoured it in a couple of days, and my memory's as bad as we've discussed.
Yeah.
And I truly, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. You're not missing anything.
That's how I felt. Like I wasn't like dying because I couldn't remember why
that
Charlie
McCauley
cried and the thing. And you know, I do feel like you enjoy it anyway, and I even hadn't read Lucy Barton since Lucy Barton came out.
Right.
And so it was like the parts of that were coming back to me. And I agree, you sort of don't need it, but like,
it would be fun.
There is a lot of like, now which one was the but I am enjoying it. I always love her books.
Me too.
I really do.
I read everything she's written. I just adore her.
She's so great.
Yeah, really
she's so great. And it's just always like, it's just a, like always a home run.
Yeah.
You know, you just feel so safe.
It's
you're like,
so true.
You're like, oh, I know
you
I'm going to enjoy this.
You got this.
It's not like when you pick up a book and you're like... I just read this book also on Marshall's recommendation called The Red Car. And I can't remember the author, of course, because I read it on Kindle. God, now that you point that out.
It's terrible,
really terrible. I just didn't love it. I finished it, of course, but I just didn't love it. And you know, but I just had to push through.
I'm so impressed.
It turned out to be short, though.
Do you read poetry? Yes, no, indifferent.
Okay, so that was the other thing I was going to say about regretting. So I used to read poetry a lot, and then I stopped, and then I started working with Lena, and she started giving me books of poetry, so I started again. Mm-hmm. But I pick a novel over poetry any day.
Yeah, me too.
Any day.
Me too.
I really do love poetry, but it's like, it's a little bit like the way I love meditation. Like,
nice idea.
Nice idea. Feels great when I do it. Feels great once I'm done.
Yeah, totally. I'm so with you. My fix for not reading poetry anymore was to subscribe to... you know, a poem a day emails.
So funny. I have a poetry app.
Yeah, I have a poem a day, and I'm not going to lie. I look at my emails every morning, and it's the first one that gets deleted. I'm like, if I read one in every 10, that'll do.
Exactly.
What do you wish you read more of or less of? Sounds like you're reading
nothing. I read
everything.
A lot.
Yeah.
It's like literally my favorite activity in the world.
Is there a book you expected to like but didn't?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure. I just can't think of... Well, you know, okay, so one of the books I almost put on this list was Big Little Lies. Because I read it after I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is not as good as the adaptation at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a lot of liberties, and it actually kind of shaped me in the way that it was like, made me feel really, really free about writing adaptations.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, you can just do that?
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right.
And they really made it better.
Yeah.
And it has a much more interesting tone than the actual book.
Interesting.
So I guess I thought that book would be better.
Yeah.
And it's a fun book, but I can't imagine putting it on my list of favorite books.
Sure.
But it for sure was one of my favorite television shows.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? I think that's really the truth, though, is that a great novel is not necessarily the great source material for a great TV adaptation. In fact,
it's harder.
The weaker the writing,
yeah,
you just want the good DNA.
That's right.
And then you get to turn it
and
into
it
whatever
has great
creature
DNA.
You want. Yeah.
It really does. And the choices, it was really amazing to watch the choices that they made
against the book.
Against the book, yeah. That simplified everything, uh-huh. And complicated, mm-hmm. everything. It was, mm-hmm. really, like, so that taught me a lot. So yeah. I will say that one. Oh, also, someone recommended, I think, Blood Will Out by Walter Kern. I thought I would love and didn't.
Oh, I don't know.
It's like the, I'm trying to even remember what it is. This is the problem with everything in my life. And those girls, unfortunately, aren't in my Kindle brain. you know what? It's the story of... It is the story of a guy who befriended that fake Rockefeller.
Oh, yes.
And I love a hoax.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I really love a hoax. Uh-huh. I love a literary hoax. Like, that stuff really turns me on. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I would love it so much. And then, truthfully, Walter Kern, the writer, I just found impossible.
Right.
And I've liked him before, but it was like his whole story of his divorce, and he just seemed like a kind of terrible husband and terrible, like, but not, he didn't quite know he was. And I just wanted to be like, can we just get back to the Rockefeller
story? Can we get
story?
Back to the Rockefeller?
Yeah.
Because that's the good shit. Yeah. What is the sexiest book you've read?
Oh my god, I don't know. Bad Behavior is pretty sexy.
Yep.
Americana is pretty sexy. God, I can't think of any sexy books, which is so weird.
That's okay. We can leave it at those two.
Okay.
What's the book that you know makes you look good when you recommend it? This is your surefire, this will get you laid if you're reading it at a bar book.
I mean, Bad Behavior is one of my top recommendations.
Uh-huh.
Also because it's short story, so you're not asking too much of it.
Right.
The Sports Writer.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's so funny. That's my one.
Yeah,
the
it
Sports
is really?
Writer is my one.
Yeah,
yes, because it literally has got me laid reading it.
Yeah, of course. Well, because first of all, it's such a great book, but also it's so sexy to see a woman
reading
a book called The Sports Writer.
I know. I did not know that at the time, but
right.
I do know that.
Yeah,
I know that now. You get to take one book to your desert island. What is it?
Right now, it's Americana.
Okay, great. I'm literally just obsessed with it,
and nothing has come close. And I read it 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. And
yeah,
it's just one of those ones. Like, I had a really hard time after reading The Interestings finding a book that stayed with me like that.
Yeah, the only thing that bothered me about that was the title. I loved everything else about that book.
Yeah, I understand that. Mm. So I love that book, and I was so attached to those characters and spent so much time with them, and then I just, like, did not know what to do after. I think I did The Goldfinch somewhere around there, but which I loved, but it still
wasn't
sating the... You just want to see the sequel.
Right.
You know?
I wonder how the movie will be. I'd like to see.
Of which one?
Of Americana.
Of Americana.
David Oyelowo.
Yes, I know. It's that. Brilliant casting.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I tell you, it's going from the top, from the bottom to the top of the bedside table now.
Okay, good.
Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you, so nice.
This was such a pleasure.
So great.
Thank you.
That was Jenny Kohner, and you've been listening to Bookish. If you like the show, subscribe, tell a friend, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, share one of the interviews on social media, send someone an email to tell them you liked it, send them a handwritten note, a postcard, a smoke signal will do. All the music is created and performed by my multi-talented husband, Davey Holmes, and the show is produced by the loving Joe Batance. Join me next week for my interview with one of the most lovely and deeply interesting men I know, Harvard Law professor and former advisor to President Obama, Cass Sunstein. How this man finds the time to read, I have no idea, but there is no one I'd rather take a book recommendation from. I love this interview. Don't miss it.